Welcome back to the On the Ice Radio Show. Hour number two of our two-hour bonanza of Stanley Cup playoff hockey. We've looked at the Wild big 4-1 win over the St. Louis Blues to increase their lead to 3-2. They've never trailed. This is like uncharted territory, Chad Graff, from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, by the way. I haven't even mentioned that, but everybody knows that, right?
Yeah, but we're past that by now.
This is uncharted territory for the Minnesota Wild to be leading.
Completely. I mean, it is the definition of uncharted territory. It's the first time in franchise history that they're up 3-2 in a series with a chance to clinch it. Every other series that they've won, they've done it in seven games going in 3-3. This is a chance for them to go in, to be in control, to try to be able to do it without their backs against the wall. And who knows if this team can do that.
I was just going to say that, but wait a minute. Their backs aren't against the wall. So if their backs aren't against the wall, what are they going to do? Derek Van Dieste. I hope you have about an hour and a half to talk. We got so much to talk about. Derek, of course, is from the Edmonton Sun. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
So, obviously, we're on the Wild and St. Louis Blues series. I want to get into what's going on in Edmonton in a bit with all of the movement that's going on there. And before, was Todd Nelson interim, by the way, as a coach there?
Yeah, he was interim once he took over from Dallas Aikens, who was fired in December. Todd Nelson always had that interim tag to him, and he was always going to be reevaluated at the end of the year. So,
well, Todd McClellan, here we come.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can pretty much ink that one. Or would Peter Chiarelli bring in Claude Julien after he's deposed for what I'm hearing is Mad Mike Milbury?
Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. All of a sudden, the Edmonton Oilers coaching job sounds pretty appealing when you have all those young players, and then you add a guy like Connor McDavid to the mix. You know, I think Peter Chiarelli may have his pick of available coaches this summer. We'll see who's out there. Obviously, the big names, Mike Babcock and Kevin McClellan, but sorry, Todd McClellan, but there's, you know, there might be some other ones floating around there as well. You never know. And so I think, you know, Peter Chiarelli, who just inherited this team yesterday, will probably take his time in getting a coach, although he said he did want to have one before the draft.
Boy, you mentioned Kevin McClellan. You slipped back into the glory days of the Oilers there, didn't you?
Yeah, they did a little bit.
Hey, you know what? I don't blame you. So let's talk about this Blues series a little bit. We'll get back on the Oilers. I think the Oilers story is so fascinating, and we'll get into that a little bit deeper. But the Wild come up with a 4-1 win. We're breaking it down to some unreal saves by Devan Dubnyk, some desperations, some well-measured. He plays great. Jake Allen has a couple of that one off the glove. That's a bummer. You want to hang on to that. Next thing you know, the game seems to change. Do you feel as the Blues are a little bit fragile from that perspective? If something bad happens, it kind of caves in a little bit?
Well, I think from just watching this series and just knowing the Blues' history that they become fragile when their goaltending is suspect. And I think last night their goaltending is suspect. And then when you let in a bad goal, which I thought Allen did in that first period, after you completely dominated a team and then your goaltender lets in a goal like that, then you start doubts creeping in your mind thinking, oh, no, here we go again. You know, this guy was supposed to be the answer. Our goaltending problems were supposed to be solved. But then they creep up again in the playoffs. And he had a really bad game. You know, he let in a couple of goals that he probably wanted back. I would say three of the four goals that he let in, he probably would have wanted back. So I think that's right there is the Achilles heel with the St. Louis Blues. If you can get to their goaltender, I think that doubt creeps throughout the entire team because they've seen this story before. And this is a team that a lot of people think are very solid everywhere except in goal. And if your opponents outplay you in goal, I think that's when you look at the Blues and you think, okay, here we go again. If I'm St. Louis, our goaltending is going to let us down again.
That's been their MO for a while, as you mentioned. And during the regular season, it was, you know, a tandem. It was Jake Allen and Brian Elliott. And now, you know, with some holes starting to peep up in Jake Allen's game a little bit, would you be surprised if they went to Brian Elliott coming into game six with an elimination game on the road? Or do you think they'll continue to ride the youngster?
Well, that's a good question. And you're trying to think about what would you think about this in two scenarios. What would you do, and then what would Ken Hitchcock do? And sometimes the things that you would do are a lot different than what Ken Hitchcock would do. If I was a betting man, I wouldn't bet against Brian Elliott going into game six. But then again, you're looking at that's kind of a desperate move. And listening to Ken Hitchcock's comments yesterday, he thought this team played well. He thought they were just unlucky a little bit here and there. And he thought the problem wasn't at his own end of the ice. He thought the problem was at the other end of the ice, that they have to bear down and bury those opportunities that they got. And I think specifically he was talking about Steen in the second period when he was robbed by Devin Dubnyk on a couple of occasions. That would have changed the entire dynamic of the game. But I wouldn't put it past Ken Hitchcock to throwing Brian Elliott there to maybe serve as a bit of a wake-up call to his hockey club.
Well, and add to that, I mean, Jake Allen being really a rookie this year. He's had some cups before, but this being his first full season in the NHL with legitimate playoff experience, I'm not ready to anoint him as Ken Dryden or Patrick Waugh as the rookie goaltenders that go absolutely berserk in the postseason. But bigger than that is, do you really want to put the weight? And we talked a little bit earlier with Tom Timmerman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He says really the feeling is legit in that hockey fandom, in that fan base in St. Louis, about the pressures to get out of the first round and start to do some damage with these great regular seasons that they've had, that, you know, is it really fair to have that on a guy that's a rookie? I don't know. That's why I think Brian Elliott makes sense.
No, that's a good question, and you're right, because there's a lot of pressure on this Blues team, and this is a position that they really haven't been able to solve in the last couple of years. You know, they had Yael Halak in there, then they had Brian Elliott, and they went out and got, you know, Ryan Miller. That didn't work out, and now they're going to Jake Allen, and that doesn't seem to be working out. So this is a position that they haven't been able to solidify for the last 4 years. So you're right, there's a lot of pressure on Jake Allen. He knows what the fan base wants there. He knows that they're tired of having a good regular season team and then falling short in the playoffs. And the situation might be a little too pressure-filled for him to throw him in there. And Brian Elliott's a bit more of a veteran. He might be able to be a bit of a calming influence for that St. Louis Blues team, because there's a lot of pressure on the entire team to perform here. And if they get knocked out in six games in the first round of the playoffs, you know, you get a sense that heads are going to roll. And I don't know if Ken Hitchcock will survive that.
There's plenty going on in your hometown, Derek Van Deest of Edmonton. We had you on the show a week ago, and we talked about the chances that Edmonton would win the lottery and get the privilege to draft Connor McDavid. And, of course, sure enough, that happens. Now, maybe because that job is more appealing, they bring in Peter Chiarelli. You wrote in the Edmonton Sun today that the Edmonton Oilers are basically now deciding to run as an organization and as a business and not as an old boys club. Can you expand on that thought a little bit and what you think this hiring means?
Yeah, I think this hiring is long overdue, and I think it's a situation when Darryl Cates took over the team, he basically started giving general manager positions and assistant general manager positions and coaching positions to people that he knew back in the day. Darryl Cates, back in the mid-80s, was involved, was a friend of the Oilers. He was friends with Wayne Gretzky, friends with Mark Messier, a friend with Craig McTavish, and then all these people. And then when he took over the club, he really didn't go out and get the best person for the job. He just said, you know what, Kevin Lowe ran my hockey club, and he brought in Craig McTavish to run the hockey club. And it was really a situation where he wanted to kind of relive those glory years of the 80s, but in a management sense. And once it wasn't working, and the owner said, well, we're going to have to rebuild, they bought themselves a little bit of time, but then it became evident that the rebuild isn't working with Kevin Lowe in charge. And then he kind of stepped back, and he brought in Steve Tambellini, and that didn't work either. And then he fired Steve Tambellini and then brought in Craig McTavish, who had been the head coach, was fired, and then they brought him back a couple of years later to be the general manager. And that wasn't working either. So it was just this endless cycle of former Oilers coming in and out of the organization and trying to get this thing straightened out. And, you know, it got to a point where fans said, you know what, it's not working. It's not going to happen with players from the past trying to run the team now. So they have to look outside the organization. And there was a lot of pressure on Joe Case to look outside this organization. But when you have a personal relationship with guys like Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish, and this relationship goes back 30 years, it's really tough to look your friend in the eye and say, you know what, I'm going to have to let you go. And I think that's a big reason that he brought in Bob Nicholson, because Bob Nicholson said to him, I can look at your organization, and if you want to make it a top-class organization, but I have to have all the power. I have to have the power of hire and fire people. And obviously, Darryl Cates gave him that power. So Bob Nicholson did what Darryl Cates couldn't do, which is alleviate Craig McTavish and Kevin Lowe of their positions in the hockey sense. They haven't been fired from the organization. They're moved around somewhere else, but they no longer have positions of making their decisions hockey-wise, which I think a lot of people at Edmonton were saying, this is long overdue. You have to bring in professionals, people that know what they're doing. And to get a guy like Peter Chiarelli to be the general manager of the club, I think that's a big coup for the Edmonton Oilers. And now you're going to get Connor McDavid as well, and you add him to that mix, and then who knows who the coach is going to be. But you know you're going to get a very good coach, just just with the pedigree of Peter Chiarelli and what the coach is going to have there to work with. I think it's just a big relief for a lot of people. They didn't want to see this nepotism keep going and going and going because it was just spinning around in circles, and I think that's why everyone is so happy this morning in Edmonton.
We're speaking with Derek Van Deest. He's from the Edmonton Sun. We're talking about the Oilers and a lot of the moves that they have in the front office. And one thing I've always said is, you know, you may think that general manager names and coach names can sell you tickets, but they don't play. Results are what usually sells tickets, what keeps people engaged, and which wins championships. The one thing I will say is I think Craig McTavish is a terrific coach. And I thought he did a wonderful job with those Edmonton teams in the mid-2000s. Do you think he gets moved to another area or allowed to go, and would he be possibly coaching in the NHL ever again?
Well, that's an interesting thing. I think his coaching days are gone. I think he wants to move more into a management side of things. And to me, the really interesting thing was that this is a coach that took a, you know, not particularly great Edmonton Oilers team. They had a lot of good players, and I think I've said this before. I kind of equated that 2006 team to the team that the Minnesota Wild have now. Mm-hmm. That team was really struggling and kind of floundering until they found themselves a goaltender in Dwayne Rolison. Ironically enough, traded from Minnesota to Edmonton, and then they took off from there. And I kind of see the same thing with the Minnesota Wild here. Once they got Devin Dumas, they kind of took off, and it looks like they might be catching lightning in a bottle here. But after that fantastic run, 2 years later, Craig McTavish was out of a job, and surprisingly, he couldn't get a coaching job anywhere. He applied for the job here in Minnesota. I believe it went to Mike Gill. He applied for a few other positions as well, and he just couldn't get back into the coaching game. Eventually, he got hired on by the Chicago Blackhawks organization to coach their AHL team, and it got to a point where it just seemed that he had hit a dead end when it came to coaching in the NHL, and he turned his attention to management, and he was given this opportunity, and he wanted to do, like, Craig McTavish is a very smart hockey guy, but when you're working in management, and you're basically wanted to turn the organization around quickly after it's been a mess for so long, he just couldn't do it, and he just couldn't make the moves that he had promised, and he kind of overpromised and underdelivered, and I think that was the reasoning for the change. And I think also he made a huge mistake in hiring Dallas Aikens as the Oilers head coach, and that
Oops.
Was a mistake that was going to cost him his job.
Absolutely. 15 seconds or less, we got a bump on this segment. Who wins your prediction game 6, Minnesota St. Louis?
I like Minnesota. I think Minnesota, you know, they haven't played well at home, but I think they'll finish it off here. They'll try to get to whoever's in that early, and I think if they get the momentum and score the first goal, I think it's going to be a tough night for St. Louis.
There you go. Derek Van Deest, now a big-time friend of Minnesota hockey in the On the Ice radio show. We'd love to have you contributing the rest of the way, if you don't mind. We'll keep having these great discussions. We appreciate it, sir.
That sounds great to me. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Thank you, Derek Van Deest. You can see his work at the Edmonton Sun. Great hockey writer indeed, in the mold of a Chad Graff. We'll be back with more. We're going to have Randy Sportak from the Calgary Sun. What a series that one is. On the Ice Radio, on Sports Radio, 105 The Ticket. I got to go to Twitter here for a second. Welcome back to the On the Ice radio show. And from the absolute idiotic tweets we've ever seen, what does it say, Dave Helmer?
There's some talk
this
about
is
copyright
idiotic.
Infringement.
Really?
For our logo.
Really?
Which is weird because we're owned by the same company, and it's the same generic logo they use across the nation.
So, Bruce Levine in Dallas, if you're listening, we're owned by the same company!
We need to add a little fuel
Moving
on the fire between the Wild and Stars.
Yeah, and right? we're better. Let's listen now. I had to throw that little cheesy shot out there. Let's listen now to something that Paul Maurice, the Winnipeg Jets coach, said yesterday afternoon in his postseason press conference. This is some interesting stuff about how hard it is to get into the playoffs, and then again, how hard it is to...
Pretty good regular season, and then seemed to hit a bit of a wall with the playoffs, and we've talked a lot about learning and et cetera, et cetera. Is that the big focus for you as a coach, to get them to be as good in the postseason as they were in the playoffs next year?
No, the primary focus at the start will be getting back to the start. Just list the teams that made the playoffs 2 years ago and didn't make it this year. And that idea of everybody, and the players will, and people will use that idea of taking the next step, and will assume that that means going farther in the playoffs. Really, what it means is playing that game again that gives you a chance to make the playoffs and becoming consistent with that game. And then you want to get to the playoffs the next year having fewer questions about how you're going to play, hopefully with good health. And because of that, you can be a little quicker. And that's going to be, and that's the difference in the series that you watch and the games that are won and lost and all the other variables, I understand. But as a group, and then you will have a little more belief, right? And a little more experience. But,
Mark,
but the reestablishing now where we started will be priority number one.
So really what he's saying is easier said than done. And then he went on to say, you know, one of the things in Minnesota, St. Louis runs through this a lot. We've been talking about this ad nauseum getting past the first rounds is he went on his own on Mike Yeo here saying what a great job he did. So let's pick up Paul Maurice 20 minutes later in the press conference.
Take a look at a Stanley Cup champion, why there's so few. An outlier Stanley Cup champion, maybe one that wasn't in that President's Trophy. There's a 2-1 game early in the season. They're down 2-1 before they won the Stanley Cup, and they're in the fight. Man, we can do this. We can come back, and we can win. And that next game played a year later, this is we shouldn't be down 2-1 to these guys. We're Stanley Cup champions. It's the arrogance that comes with some success. And it's why, and I'm not sure if he's in it, but Mike Yeo, in my mind, should be a front runner in there as coach of the year. Because for 2 months, aside from the mumps and all the injuries he had, that's what you were reading out of there. Hey, we made the playoffs last year. We're better than this. This is a disgrace. This is a crime. It's unacceptable. That is an animal to deal with that's very hard to contain. And he did a masterful job of that. Just the goalie came in and changed, but the team was prepared to accept that change, and off they went. And the run that he went on in our division, in our conference, was spectacular. I mean, that was a special piece of coaching from a coach's point of view, right? That's the beast that we have to worry about, that somehow that we've learned that lesson, right? That it's a straight line. Well, we learned it last year. This should be no problem. Get right back at it. Maybe more difficult to learn those lessons next year. So let's start with my messaging today.
Wow. And so for the Minnesota Wild fans, take that message. Ken Weeb from the Winnipeg Sun, join us right now. I'm sure you were at that press conference. First of all, thanks for taking the time out today and your thoughts on those comments.
Well, specific to Mike Yeo, I thought he did do a fantastic job as well. It's just very odd. You know, the fine line in coaching, right? You guys have seen it the last 2 years. In a lot of regards, Mike Yeo was under the gun 2 years ago especially. And even this year, when the team was struggling 10 points out of the playoffs, some people wanted him out. But Devan Dubnyk comes in and solidifies the net mining position, and the Wild go on that epic run and are now well-positioned in the playoffs as well. So I think Mike did a fantastic job, but to be honest, to me, he's in, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth on the ballot. I don't get a vote for the Jack Adams, but Paul Maurice, Bob Hartley are 1-2 for me. Alain Vigneault, the job he's done to get the Rangers, after getting to the Cup Final and losing, to winning the President's Trophy, I think he's 3 for me. Laviolette, Barry Trotz, and then Mike Yeo. You could put those three in probably, you know, battling for that 4 or 5 position. But he did do a fabulous job. And what Maurice is saying is absolutely true, you know, just because you make the playoffs this year, it was a big accomplishment, you know, franchise record for points with 99, but all that got them was the second wild card. And we all know that the Central Division is not getting any easier. Dallas and Colorado both will probably make big steps to improve in the off season, and, you know, the battle to get one of potentially 5 and maybe only 4 playoff spots next year is going to be an uphill battle for all the teams in the Central.
Well, and Ken, one of the things that he's really basically saying is, you know, we had the maximum amount of teams from the Central Division that are in the postseason. What are they like? You know, who knows if that's going to happen again? And then on top of that, as you mentioned, Dallas was a playoff team last year. Colorado, a playoff team last year. They're not going to be out of this thing for a very long time. So, you know, everybody has to, you know, kind of temper the expectations and understand this, as I said earlier in our program, is not the 21-team NHL where only 5 teams don't make it. It is hard to make it into the postseason.
Oh, no question. Look no further than Colorado. Not only did they make the playoffs last year, they won the division. So
remember when?
Their drop-off was off the charts, and all that got them was a first-round exit. So again, it's very difficult to win in this league, obviously, but having said that, when you have an excellent team, you have to take advantage of the opportunity, right? So, no better example than, as you mentioned, St. Louis and for the Wild. Wild are up 3-2. They better close this out, because if it goes to a game 7, anything can happen, and, you know, next thing you know, who knows? Who knows what happens? Who knows if Dubnyk's back, right? So, you know, big question marks all around every off season, but the thing about the Jets, the Wild, the Blues, the Blackhawks, right down the list, the core players of all of the successful teams in the Central Division, most of them are not going anywhere, and all these teams are on the rise. So that's what makes it so fascinating. We got five legitimate Stanley Cup teams, if you will, contenders, if you will, in the Central Division, and you know, who knows what happens in the off season. But as I just found out firsthand, those Anaheim Ducks are a bona fide Stanley Cup contender as well. And a lot of people, including myself, thought it would be, you know, not an upset in the in the traditional sense of the word for the Jets to beat them in a long series. But boy, oh boy, the Ducks look fantastic, and to me, they look like a team that could easily make the Western Conference Final and could contend for the Cup. Ryan Getzlaf, Corey Perry were fantastic, and as you guys know from the old Canucks Wild rivalry, Ryan Kesler proving once again that when healthy, he is one of the more dominant two-way players in the playoffs. He gets under your skin, and then he sticks it to you by producing clutch goals.
Absolutely. This Jets team this season kind of reminded me of the Wild two seasons ago. The first time that they made the playoffs in 5 years, it was the first year of Parisian Suter, and the first year that they were sort of a bona fide team. They made the playoffs and had an early exit. And then that was when they came back last season and had the goal of doing more, and that's when they beat the Central Division champs, the Colorado Avalanche that we had talked about. Where, in your mind, do the Jets go from here? What moves do they need to make this offseason, and how do things look for them going into next season?
Yeah, fascinating. It's really fascinating, the Jets as a whole. You know, Kevin Cheveldayoff made some big-time trades this year, blockbuster, if you will, bringing in Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford. But now you have nine potential UFAs on the roster, and you know, can you get Drew Stafford to sign before July 1st? It was a really good fit for him here. You know, he's living in Minnesota. He went to college at UND. I gelled really well with Blake Wheeler. All kinds of connections to the Minnesota area. And Michael Frolik, you know, the Jets had a chance to sign a long-term deal. They couldn't come to an agreement on the money, and now, you know, with another strong 42-point season, Michael Frolik probably thinks he can make between $4 and $5 million, and I'm not sure the Jets, you know, can find the room in the cap to pay him that. So Dustin Byfuglien is a UFA, not at the end of this year, but at the end of next year. Andrew Ladd played with a sports hernia, but he talked yesterday about being willing to sign an extension. So, and there's a massive pool of prospects, you know, none brighter than Nick Ehlers, who's put together back-to-back 100-point seasons in the QMJHL. You know, the future looks bright, but again, there's no guarantees, as Paul Maurice pointed out, and he's right. You know, you never know how things come together. Jets were much better within their division this year, 16 wins, a lot more than they had last year, much better defensively, but as they found out in the playoffs, they still have a lot of work to do in terms of that team defense when it comes to the games that matter most in the playoffs.
Anaheim, with a very impressive series, do you feel as though the Western Conference Championship runs through Anaheim?
Oh, no question. You know what? Their defense impressed me so much, and a lot of people looked at that as their potential weak link going into the playoffs. And again, Clayton Stoner, former Wild defenseman, was sort of on the bubble for being in the lineup in this series. Bruce Boudreau chose to dress him ahead of James Wisniewski, a trade deadline acquisition, and he came up aces in that decision. Stoner was fantastic. Physical force, blocking shots. I thought he played a really good series, and Simone Dupre really had a strong series as well. And guys like Cam Fowler, Sammy Vatanen, very underrated. You know, we don't see them a whole lot in the Midwest here. Those guys were really good. And Francois Beauchemin, who's a guy that I've watched since his days with the Hamilton Bulldogs in the American Hockey League, was a real dominant force on the back end as well. So we know they've got depth. They've got four lines worth of depth. They played the first round without Nate Thompson, and he'll be returning for the second round, and that'll give them another good face-off man, penalty killer, a guy who's been through the battles in the playoffs. So to me, as long as Freddie Anderson holds up, I think the Ducks will be the team, playing the team that comes out of the Central Division playoffs here.
Key caveat, Freddie Anderson in goal. We'll see how that works. Ken Wiebe, thanks for joining us. Great insights as always. We appreciate your contributions to the show. Have yourself a great day.
Yep, you guys too. Enjoy the rest of it here.
Thank you. Ken Weeb from the Winnipeg Sun joins us as we talk everything hockey. Now we're going to move on to Calgary, Vancouver. Look out around the bend on the ice radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
There's a bouncing puck and a turnover. David Jones shoots. He scores. In deep is Alex Edwards. Nick Foligno. Radim Verbata. Foligno shoots. He scores. Sedin's back on. Henrik won the draw. In comes Dan Hamby. Through it at the net. Daniel Sedin scores.
I would just like pay big money just for Jim Houston. Please, one time.
Just to narrate your life. Or
narrate my life. narrate a wild game.
Yeah.
Anything. Please. Why don't we get... I mean, that is unbelievable.
That the is best terrific. Of the biz. Absolutely.
And by the way, that is the best series going right now in the National Hockey League. The Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks with the Flames leading 3-2. Vancouver with a must win the other night as they came back and defeated the Flames. We're bringing the writer from the Calgary Sun, Randy Sportak. And boy, that one's not for the faint of heart, that series.
No, it's been a little more physical than we were expecting. It's been pretty intense, a lot of skating. That's actually been a fun series.
So the Canucks eke out a 2-1 win to force a game six, a must-win situation, but the Flames have been so good at home. I mean, you don't want to get ahead of yourself, obviously, but what's the vibe you're getting from the Calgary camp right now?
From the team, a quiet confidence, I think, is the best way to put it. They know they played well the games at home. They actually really dominating those games. It's like I think eke out 2-1 was it was flattering for the Flames that last game. Vancouver was so much better. But I think there's a quiet confidence of knowing that, you know, Vancouver was really desperate that game and they didn't match it, but then they come home. I'm sure you've seen the visuals and the audio out of Calgary with the building, and it's pretty lively. I think the Jet building is probably a little more, but I think they believe, you know, they come home, they have their fans, they'll close it out. Well, I'm packed and ready to go for Game 7 in Vancouver.
Well, just like Chad is for St. Louis, he's ready to go, too, in case that happens. But can you talk on Chris Russell and the work he's done in light of Giordano being out of the lineup and injured? I mean, he's been awesome.
Yeah, he has been. I mean, all the block shots. And he elevated his game in the way of the outlet pass and retrieval, which is such a big part of the game now. Mm-hmm. Everyone talks about defensemen being able to move the puck up ice, but the first element is being able to get it and get it in your corner and in your zone. And he's really good at that. And TJ Brody is also really good at that. And I would say their top four defensemen now, counting Derek Englund and Dennis Wiedemann, they've done yeoman's work ever since Mark Giordano went down. I mean, Englund is probably playing 7 minutes a game more than he was before. The other guys are playing 3-4 minutes more than they were before. And I honestly thought they were going to fall off a table as soon as Mark Giordano went down. And they bucked up. You know, they have played big minutes. They're doing it every night. And I'm wondering if it's going to wear them down, but it hasn't so far.
But didn't we all feel as though that was going to happen? I mean, it was you can't take a Norris Trophy. I mean, he and Carlson are 1A and 1B, in my opinion, as far as that short list of Norris Trophy winner discussions. And what you saw, what I've seen, is a team that's really rallied together. And you know, we talked about Bob Hartley a little bit earlier with Mr. Weeb from the Winnipeg Sun. And for me, he's my Jack Adams guy. Can you talk about what he has done and how valuable he's been to this team?
Well, I think what Bob has done, biggest thing is on top of making them believe and they work hard, but it's the way that they play. He took a look at what he had for talent and built the game plan around them. I know the analytics just hate this team, all those people, the Corsi crowd and all that. But they're not big enough to play the Corsi game, right? Where possession and down low and cycling, they just aren't. They have a lot of speed. They have more skill than people give them credit for. And much like a lot of the Wild, right? Except, yep, you know, the Wild have Coyle and Niederreiter for the size aspect. But they play a game where it's push the puck up ice, long outlet passes, lots of icing, but they try to turn the puck and move it up ice as quickly as possible. And that's what they had to do with the talent they have. Bob Hartley, I think, deserves a lot of credit for, instead of trying to put the round peg in the square hole, saying, you know what, this is the way we got to play. This is the bodies we have. And it's worked. They have a lot more speed and a lot more skill than people realize at first. And that's why they've had success.
In the first hour of the show, we talked to Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times just about how civil the Central Division matchups have been. For as good as the Central Division is, you know, they've been, you know, very civil affairs. It hasn't been like this one that you've seen. How much fun has this been to watch and be a part of it and see and just the hatred that is seemingly existing between Calgary and Vancouver right now?
And Kessler isn't even there.
there's been some pretty serious nastiness, and a lot of it stems, you know, and Vancouver, this is what I would do too. If you've got John Gaudreau and Sam Bennett, you know, smaller guys, Bennett's tall, but he's slender, you know, if you have these kids that are playing in the playoffs for the first time, you bet you tell them. And they've taken a lot of abuse, a lot of after whistle shoves, a lot of cross checks, late hits, all those things. So, you know, the Flames, to their credit, which is what you do, you reply in kind. And that first brawl, that all stemmed from a hit that John Gaudreau took from Dan Hamhuis. There was a penalty, but it was about 30 seconds before. He took a high hit from behind, uncalled. So the Flames, as soon as they had a chance at a whistle with all their big guys out, and Bob Hartley put out his big guys, they saw Hamhuis and went after him. And so then the next game, when the Flames are beating the Canucks late, they reply in kind. So things settled down last game. But, yeah, this rivalry is always sort of simmered anyway. It just finally boiled over, which is what happens in playoffs.
So from the Sam Bennett story, the 18-year-old, obviously, can you share his story with our listeners who might not be familiar where he came from and how young he is?
Well, if they may have heard of him, he's the guy that couldn't do the pull-up at the draft combine. But this, you know, eventually, and here was the funny thing. I give this kid a lot of credit. He shows up for training camp. They do the fitness testing, and he comes to the assembled media. I mean, he's a fourth overall draft pick, right? He comes to the meeting. He goes, before we get this going, I just want to say I did 9 pull-ups today. So the kid has owned it. He's worked really hard. But then as training camp went on, he was playing really well in the preseason and then started missing and hurting. And then they found out he needed his shoulder, you know, surgery. So he had shoulder surgery at the beginning of October, never played until February. He spent a ton of time in Calgary during his rehab, though, working out with players, doing video sessions, even practicing before he was sent to junior right at the end of February. He played 11 regular season games, put up 24 points in the regular season with Kingston. They got bumped in pretty quickly, actually. They called him up. They brought him here. They kept him for a week practicing. They threw him in the final regular season game and plunked him in the playoff roster. And he's
That's
been
amazing.
Fantastic ever since.
He has been awesome. It's been great to watch. What a story.
And he's the part I see about him that I didn't realize he had. I heard he's incredibly competitive. And you watch him, and he is. He gives the business back as hard as he gets it. But he goes to the net. He does all those things. He's got high-end skill. He's got good speed. He battles in the corners as well as any young player I've ever seen in terms of those below the red line, along the boards, those kind of battles. He's quite good at it for a kid who's 18 and I think a $1.85 maybe.
That's incredible. Game 6 tonight, Calgary has a chance to close it out. 8 o'clock Central game. What do you see unfolding tonight?
I think Calgary's going to have a better start than the last game for sure. I think it's one of those, this has been a real momentum series, and you can feel the momentum swings in game. Calgary really did have a chance to put that game away in Vancouver, didn't do it. The Canucks got the goal, tied it up, and then really took over. But I don't think the Flames were very good in that game. They were slow on pucks. I see them trying to play like they did in game 3 and 4. They came out really hard, really intense, more physical. You know, I'm sure people have heard of Michael Ferland, you know, bashing around and playing the kamikaze, and he's a big kid. He's 215. I think they're going to try to be more physical on the Canucks. They're going to try to, you know, carry more momentum. I really wonder if Calgary gets up 3-1 kind of deal, if the Canucks will eventually just say shut it down.
We will watch that one closely. Get yourself a series win, and if you wouldn't mind joining us again as the playoffs continue, it would be great to have you, Randy.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You bet. Thank you. That's Randy Sportak, Calgary Sun. We're going to wrap up the show. Wow, what a great 2 hours this has been. Wild Blues preview on the Ice Radio, on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Little AC/DC, High Voltage. The Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues get ready to play this Sunday, tomorrow, 2 o'clock.
Tomorrow
NBC.
Afternoon. National television.
Who do we get? Do we get Strader again? He's pretty
that
much on this
one. That would be my
guess,
yeah.
And do they toss a little, Brian, I've got the big scar on the forehead ankle on?
I'm sure they do.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't see
it. I was watching
it.
The game, it happened.
And?
I think it was Sidney Crosby clearing attempt in the neutral zone, deflected, ramped up off a stick, and it just cracked him right between the right between the eyes.
Ugh.
He walks off with the towel applied to the head. Engblom comes back with stitches. Toughest guy in the business.
That's terrific.
Do you think any of our local heroes would do that?
Oh, my God. It happened to Mike Greenlay.
Oh, so there's one.
And, of course, this is too fitting that the first time you blame Sidney Crosby, because who else would you blame? The second time it was Matt Cook's stick that comes across.
Well,
it was too funny.
It was a deflected
puck.
Yeah,
exactly. That's true.
It wasn't like Sidney turned and fired and hit him there. So, we've gone through a lot of the things, and there's a couple of themes here that's standing out to me, Chad. And first of all, I found it quite interesting. It's... From the Wild perspective, was it that they played bad on Wednesday and the Blues were just that much better? And, so if you ask the Blues, that's a perfect game. We're not changing a thing. Ken Hitchcock, we're awesome. Get out of my way. I love myself. And then you go to the Wild camp, man, were we not good? And, as you termed it, a clunker in your article. So what is it? Which way? I mean, you can't really gauge this stuff anymore.
Not really. I mean, the way that a lot of the players explained it is in this series with these teams so even, if you take your foot off the pedal even just a little bit, the other team is going to fly past you. And that's how tightly contested this series has been played. And I think that's what we'll continue to see again. The amazing thing with alternating these wins is that one team wins, the next team lets up even just a little bit. And that's enough for, in the case of games 3 and 4 and even last night, that's the case. I mean, these are 3-goal games. Game 4 is a 5-goal game. It's not like these are close games, even though, if you watch it, it feels like a close game, but the goalies have been so different in each game.
That's been the bizarre part. For the goaltending, we talked about that too, Jake Allen being the rookie with a lot on him. Now, we heard Mr. Van Deest from the Edmonton Sun suggest that maybe this will be Brian Elliott's nod.
I don't know. See, I've been thinking about that a lot. I think that's a very bold move if you do that. You're telling your team, here we come into this elimination game and we're just throwing whatever we have at the wall on this last day after we've talked for all season about not doing what we did last year. Here we are facing the same exact position and we're just going to put in a guy in net who hasn't played in, 2 weeks? I mean, I don't see it happening, but stranger things have been done.
He got lit up at the XL Energy Center when they played here and that, was it 5-2 loss or whatever it was?
6-3 or whatever it was.
6-3. It was 5-1 at one point, whatever it was. But, this is not Ken Hitchcock's first rodeo, no question. So whatever he does, I'm pretty sure he'll be confident in what his thought process is there. But... Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's one of the other interesting subplots. We've sort of talked on it a bunch, but from the St. Louis perspective, a loss tomorrow afternoon in St. Paul is their third straight first-round exit, the fourth year in a row that they haven't gone past the second round. This is a team that is perennially at the top of the conference. So from the St. Louis perspective, to take a step back from Minnesota, and we've talked a lot about what a win would mean for the Minnesota Wild, but for the St. Louis Blues, and we talk a ton about the Central Division, a loss against the Wild, especially in Game 6, if they lose to the Wild in 6 games, expect some big changes, I think, comes from the Blues.
From just a human perspective, is it bad for me to feel bad for St. Louis if they lose this series? I would feel legitimately bad for that whole fan base, the organization, the players, the managers, the coaches. I would feel bad.
Put that bad in perspective, I mean, St. Louis, that Minnesota sports fans feel bad for St. Louis.
Well, no,
that should tell you a little bit about...
I'm not saying I'm a fan here.
No, I know. I mean, it's... I think a lot of Minnesota fans would feel that way, and it says a lot about what the Blues fans have had to go through, that it's taken this long, and now that they finally, they've put up with some bad teams, now they have a really good team 4 years in a row, and they're on the brink of losing in the first round for three straight seasons.
We're not lowering them into the ground here in this series by any stretch of the imagination, but the Wild, I think one of the key post-game notes, they have not lost back-to-back games this year since back in January
19th
yes,
and 20th.
That's incredible. So, that's what needs to happen here. The Blues have to win back-to-back. If you're St. Louis, though, all your job is to win the first, second, and third period and force a Game 7. If you're Minnesota, you need to do the same, take care of business and unpack the bags and stay here for a bit.
The key for Minnesota, and this can't be overstated enough because the Wild know that they haven't been very good at home. After they won last night to put themselves up 3-2 after Game 5, a huge win for them, rather than reflect at that, so many of the players were like, look, we know we have not been very good at home. This needs to change right now. We're not celebrating this Game 5 win. We know that, you know, everything, and it's too fitting that everything would be against the Wild, up 3-2 at home as the underdog in the series. It's rather remarkable that they have to put this pressure on themselves at home. But that's the way it is because they haven't been that good at home, you know, in the last 2 months.
Well, they were really good when they returned from St. Louis in that game. That 3-0 win was outstanding. Matt Cook, I thought, had an incredible presence. Cannot take him out of the lineup from my view.
I agree. I think you probably go with the exact same lineup. I think that one of the things that we didn't get into, and this is probably because they ended up saving themselves with key assists, Chris Stewart and Thomas Vanek, both of them need to be much better than they have. Both of them are without a goal. Both of them played major roles with this team
until
in
last
the last
night.
Month.
Stewart scored. Remember off the feed from Koivu?
They switched it and credited it to Koivu. So Koivu gets the goal on that one, even though Stewart, you know, threw his arms up and it was originally thought to be Stewart. But they did switch that one, so Stewart doesn't get the credit for that goal, but they need a lot more from him. His play on the wall has not been good enough. Same with Thomas Vanek. I know that, you know, fans may think that we harp on those two a lot or too much, but at the end of the day, they need to be a lot better, those
two. The very things that are plaguing Thomas Vanek in the postseason right now is what had Montreal up in arms.
Exactly.
And they were absolutely nuts about it. A lot different than here, but he's kind of flown under the radar, but you don't even notice him. You got to be honest here. It's
gotten bad.
He had a great regular season, but you know, I mean, at some point, when does a Ryan Carter or a Sean Bergenheim look like a better option? I'm not kidding.
I know it's amazing because he'll do so little for so long, and he'll have one play where he sets something up, and then all of a sudden, you know, the Gophers diehards are pointing to that as a reason why he should be in. But
get over the Gopher thing.
I don't care. Thomas Vanek has to be so much better, especially if the Wild are going to go beyond this series. They can win this series without him scoring, but in order to move, you know, to where they really want to go and to win more than one playoff series, they can't just rely on scoring from Parisi and Zucker. It has to be more than that. And it has to, in my opinion, you know, come from guys like Stewart and Vanek.
Well, and Zucker's been shut down.
One beautiful goal, he's been shut down. That line has been shut down. I mean, that line especially gets into the offensive zone, and they're out of there very quickly.
The Blues chose to shut that line down, too, on the matchups, to their credit. One other topic of note. Really, the Wild have chosen to go with Jordan Leopold, what appears to be over Prosser. And to me, if you would have told me that was an option in February or January, I'd have been like, what?
Imagine that.
I don't know if I would have made that, but I guess it's working. But, boy, Nate Prosser was so good.
We were sitting right here in February talking about how he was
a great story.
Yes, it was a great story. he had the injury, and he came back, and they felt that in the last 2 weeks, Leopold was better, so they were going to go with a hot hand. And I was a little surprised that maybe Prosser didn't jump in at some point one of the losses, but here they are up 3-2, so it's hard to question that.
Music's playing. Do they win or lose tomorrow?
I think it's too fitting. I think that they lose and go back to game seven. And at this point, my guess would probably be that they win game seven.
Happens to this town if they lose?
If they lose two games?
Yeah. What happens to this town if they lose and goes back to St. Louis?
I think fans will be all right. Mm. They won game seven last year. This is a team that knows how to win on the road. It's the home stuff that's killing them.
Look at over there from Chad Graff. I love it. David Albert, keep this thing rolling. Chad, limited sleep. Great effort today. Thank you.
Whew. I'm going to go get another coffee.
And go write a couple more stories. Yeah. Good luck to you. And hopefully you can catch up on sleep. When we come around the bend, it's On Deck Radio. Al Newman and Gene Larkin in the green room as we speak. So long, everybody.